Namaste and welcome to the Phases podcast. I'm your host, Anita Goa. In this episode, we'll talk about the stages of menopause, particularly focusing in on perimenopause. I'm thrilled to be joined by Dr. Shashi Prasad, a GP and a British Menopause Society accredited menopause specialist, who is also a women's integrative and functional medicine doctor. She's located in Surrey in England. So whether you're approaching perimenopause and want to prepare yourself, or you're in the midst of it, this episode aims to give you information that you can use as part of your survival kit. Let's dive in. Here's 8 tips to make your perimenopause easier for you. Enjoy. So lovely to have you here, Dr. Shashi Prasad. I've known you now for a couple of years, so I feel like we're friends by now. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you so much, Anita, for having me. It's a real pleasure to join you on this podcast.
Thank you. So before we begin, starting with the 8 tips that we're going to share with the audience about perimenopause, would you mind sharing what life is teaching you at the moment?
Well, as a midlife woman, I'm learning a lot. And I think one of the most important things I'm learning is that I have to look after myself. Like all of us, you know, work, family, we're always running, trying to meet deadlines. I think in midlife, it's really important to take a step back, look after ourselves, our physical health, our mental health. I think that is really important.
Yeah, doctors also have to take care of themselves. So what is your approach as a GP and a menopause specialist?
So like you know, Anita, my background training is in GP and I have worked on menopause as my special interest. So I have trained in conventional menopause practice, plus have a functional approach. So I've got an integrative approach towards menopause using both regular HRT, bioidenticals, herbs, lifestyle, supplements. So a whole more kind of holistic patient-centered or personalized approach. So we work towards overall well-being and overall better health for women.
Yeah, I think that is the best way as a survival kit.
So, exactly.
Yeah, so that's really good. And we're going to go through 8 things that we feel are very important to know about the stages of menopause, and particularly focusing in on perimenopause. So let's go through them step by step so that all the women that are listening to this, whether they are approaching perimenopause, they want to learn about it, or maybe they're in the midst of it, I think there's always something to learn. So number one is basically education and knowing the different stages of menopause. Would you mind sharing with us what the stages of menopause are?
It's a really, really good question, Anita, and thank you for bringing it up. I think the first thing that, you know, most important thing is understanding what's happening to our bodies. So conventionally, we differentiate it into 3 parts. So perimenopause is when the hormonal changes begin. Ovaries are still working, but it's stuttering. So it's not working normally and rhythmically, but it's kind of on and off. So that is perimenopause. Then eventually the period stops, what we call as final menstrual period. That is one day in the woman's life. That is called the menopause. And then the rest of the life after menopause is called postmenopause. Now we have got a very long time. Nearly women spend nearly 1/3 of their life postmenopausally. If we say average life expectancy is 80 years, average age of menopause is 50 years. So women may actually spend 30 years of life after menopause.
Interesting. And is menopause a deficiency or not?
So menopause is not a deficiency disorder. I've heard that said at various places. I feel menopause is a stage of life, which is different from your other stages of life. For example, your puberty, your adolescent age, your reproductive age, and menopause is a different stage of life. There are significant changes in a woman's body during this stage. And we have to understand that and adapt our lifestyle accordingly. So what has worked for us in our 30s and 40s may not be enough in our perimenopausal and postmenopausal years. So we have to see what our body's requirement is and what we can do to make ourselves more fitter and healthier.
Exactly. So our tip number two is about perimenopause. Could you talk a little bit more about the stage perimenopause, what happens?
I think it's really, really important to understand perimenopause, because menopause and postmenopause we know because the periods have stopped. So there is very clear demarcation there. But perimenopause can creep on very subtly, very gently. And many women don't even realize that this is going on. So what is it that marks perimenopause? So the first thing is that is there is a change in ovarian activity. So our ovaries are not working as well as our reproductive years. So there are two main functions of ovaries, that is production of the eggs, that's ovulation, and production of the female reproductive hormones, which is estrogen, progesterone, and testosterone. So with perimenopause, both of them are changing. So ovulation doesn't happen every month, so it's erratic on and off, and the hormonal changes begin. So normally in a woman's menstrual cycle in reproductive years, the hormone change throughout the cycle in a very nice rhythmic manner. So that is lost. So the hormonal changes become very erratic and very chaotic. And many women tell that, I feel my hormones are not right, and they are absolutely right. So that's one thing. The second thing is that there is change in menstruation. So especially in the early stages, again, this can be subtle. So the periods can, the cycle can become, start to vary in length. So they could, in the early stages, you can say it might be 7 days early or 7 days late. And as time progresses, towards late perimenopause, women may start to miss cycles. So there's a second thing, change in menstruation. And the third thing is that onset of hormonal symptoms, so hormone deficiency symptoms. Again, this can be very subtle. They may be flushes and sweats, they might not be, they may be mood changes or other hormonal symptoms. So if we know what to expect, then we will be able to pick up this very important change earlier rather than later.
Mm-hmm. And that leads me to tip number three is, when can perimenopause begin?
There is, it's a very wide variation in range. So, age range. So it could even start in women in late 30s. It would be quite shocking for some of the women, like late 30s, you're not even thinking about anything like that. But the hormonal changes may start late 30s, early 40s, mid 40s. Let's probably say that that's the time it may start. And again, how long it lasts also varies a lot. 2 years, 5 years. It's well known that perimenopause may last even 10 years.
Yeah, for me, it lasted 10 years.
So yeah, there you go. So it can be very long. And I think first 4 to 5 years, you lose just thinking what's happening to you. Would you say that?
Yes.
You actually realize that it's perimenopause.
Yeah, I think I lived with perimenopause for about 5 years before I knew it was perimenopause that I was living with.
So, exactly.
Yeah. So hopefully this will help those who listen to it to not be caught in that trap, because then you can easily go into a spiral, not understanding what it is that's happening to your body, thinking that you're going crazy or something. And exactly. is it different for different people? Is it different for different ethnic groups, perimenopause?
Absolutely. There can be a lot of variation in the symptoms and how women experience this phase, and the severity of the symptoms, the type of symptoms may vary, the age of onset may vary, And definitely there is a difference in women of different ethnic origins. For example, it's very clear that perimenopause and menopause can be a bit earlier in women of South Asian origin and in women of African origin as well. So the average age of onset of menopause may be 2 to 3 years earlier than the Caucasian women. Also in Black women, the severity of the hot flushes and night sweats are much more, and the perimenopause may last for much more longer. And the other difference that we notice is that women of Chinese origin, Japanese, Korean origin, their symptoms are different. So they may not actually have flushes or sweats. They may have more emotional symptoms, more sleep-related symptoms, and may have more sexual difficulties. So women of different origin may actually have different symptoms. And when these, Chinese or Japanese origin women go to the doctors with these symptoms, if they are not having flushes or sweats, it's very easy to miss perimenopause in them.
Yeah, very interesting. And tip number four is, what are the symptoms? Like, how many symptoms are there? And could certain things be a perimenopause symptom that you might not be aware of, even think about that it could be?
That, if looking at where, depending on what you're reading, they say 30 symptoms, 40 symptoms, 50 symptoms of perimenopause, but I'll tell about the kind of broad categories and the common symptoms, and then we can touch upon some of the rare symptoms. So I think one of the most common symptoms is mood-related symptoms. So what we call, change in the mood, so mood swings, anxiety, irritability, anger, irrational thoughts, very common. And often these may start before the flushes and the sweats begin. So women don't know what's happening. So they feel that their personality is changing. And some of the women may actually say that, I feel like I'm going mad. So important to realize that if you're having unexplained anxiety, depression, irrational thoughts, think perimenopause. It may be hormonal. The other symptoms is change in sleep. Very common, difficulty falling asleep, waking up many times or waking up early hours in the morning. Then, cognition related symptoms. So many women feel that, they can't think properly. They are, they have got brain fog. They are not able to perform at work. They're losing confidence. And then they start getting into this panicky cycle. Again, think about perimenopause. Is it hormonal that is affecting your cognition? Energy levels. Very important. The women who are normally very energetic, very motivated to exercise, suddenly feel that they just don't have the motivation or drive or energy to exercise. Then joints, what we call as musculoskeletal symptoms, also very common. So lots of aches and pains. And, in the morning, I've got women telling me that, I feel like an old woman when I wake up, and they are like in their early 40s really. So again, joint-related symptoms important, and there is more kind of injury after exercise. There can be more delayed recovery after exercise. Sexual desire symptoms as well. So women may notice that they are losing their sexual desire, interest in their sexual relationships. There can be skin issues, so dry skin, irritated skin. Vaginal dryness is a very important one. So intercourse can get painful. Vagina can feel quite dry, sore, and itchy. Some women start having bladder-related symptoms as well. So the bladder can become more sensitive. So these are very, very common symptoms, actually, that women experience without realizing that these can be hormonal. There are some rare symptoms or symptoms that women complain of, things like tinnitus, that ringing in the ear, or sometimes there's gum-related symptoms. Sometimes they've got abnormal sensation on the skin, what we call as formications, so, itchy, crawly sensations. Obviously, palpitations, so obviously they are also there, but many times they can be, if they are very unusual symptoms, what I say is that get yourself checked medically as well.
Yeah, that's how it started with me, was joint pain and muscle ache. I relate to that. I couldn't get out of bed and I felt like I was an old woman. And mood swings, horrible mood swings. And my worst symptom, I think, was brain fog. I could not string sentences together. And a weird symptom also was I lost my confidence in driving. So for a long time, I had such fear of driving. And once I got over to postmenopause, it just magically went away. Very strange.
Yes, very strange, isn't it? You would think that people who have driven all their life, suddenly they are very scared to drive.
Yeah, yeah. So number five, or tip number five, is what can you do for these symptoms? Like what will help you once you start to feel any of the symptoms that maybe you mentioned? And one thing that I wanted to say, sorry, before you begin, is you might not never, ever have a hot flush. Like, I've never had a single hot flush. So that might not be a symptom that you will ever get, but you might get a slew of other symptoms.
Absolutely. So hot flushes and night sweats and, you know, stopping of the periods, most of the women know that, okay, this is related to menopause. But all the other symptoms, they are so common and they have such a huge impact on a woman's quality of life.
Exactly. So what can you do to support the symptoms?
There are lots we can do, really, and it all depends upon what are your main symptoms and what we can do to make you feel better. So a few things. Nutrition has a very important role. So that's one of the things, like, you know, when you asked me, what are the things that you know, life is teaching you? And I think one of the most important thing is nutrition. You really have to watch what you're eating. So processed food, you know, very rich in sugar and salt, can increase menopausal symptoms, can, you know, make you feel more tired, can make you feel more foggy, or even worsen your flushes and sweats. Same goes with having too much caffeine, alcohol. All of them can make your menopausal symptoms worse. So try and eliminate these things from your diet and include healthy, well-balanced, whole food-based diet. So enough protein. So the protein requirement increases by midlife. Mm-hmm. So normally say a rough ballpark about 1 gram of protein per kg body weight. You can be a little bit under, a little bit over, depending upon how much you can tolerate. Lots and lots of vegetables, what we say, eat the rainbow, different colors, lot of phytonutrients in there, lot of antioxidants in there. And, plants which are rich in phytoestrogens, so things like soy, flax seeds, legumes, they support your natural hormones. So that might help ease up your symptoms. Have whole grains, avoid processed carbs. So, you know, whole grain rice, root vegetables, to give you more kind of complex carbohydrates. So nutrition is important. What do you think? Did you make any changes, Anita, in your diet when you...
Yeah, I think that one thing that made a huge difference for my brain fog is when I started to have a more protein-rich breakfast. Mm-hmm. And also, I think, more protein in general, because that sort of curbed my sweet tooth. Because there was a period during perimenopause where I was just craving a lot of sweets. Mm-hmm. But incorporating more protein helped that. And I started to notice that the brain fog got much better when I had that savory breakfast. So I really think that's important. Plus also for maintaining muscle strength and muscle mass, increasing our protein intake, I'm a huge believer in.
Absolutely. And same exercise as well, really. So exercise becomes very important, like you said, to preserve your muscles. So with midlife, perimenopause, you begin to lose your muscles much more faster. So you really have to look, again, a big change that you have to make compared to your earlier years. More strength training, so having more protein in your diet, doing more exercises which involves resistance training, plus your cardiovascular, obviously you have to do both. Making sure you stretch properly to reduce the risk of injuries both before and after exercise. On an average, it's recommended to do about 150 to 225 minutes of moderately strenuous exercise over a week, and like in a combination of all different types of exercises. Yoga is really important, you know, and maybe you can tell more about that. It not only it helps with the core strength, with your balance, with your flexibility. There is very clear evidence that women who practice yoga regularly, their menopausal symptoms are lesser. What do you think?
Yeah, and we know that stress exacerbates the symptoms, and that's one thing that yoga is very good with, is to support us with our breath and to downregulate our nervous system. So we have all different kinds of yoga poses and yoga practices to do, but any practice that helps you to feel like you calm down and you decrease any form of stress. We know stress is inevitable in life, but it's very much how you manage the stress.
Exactly. And same with stress is similar to that, is looking after your sleep. So prioritizing sleep is also important. Having a regular bedtime routine, going to bed at not too late, and then having a regular waking up routine, because already sleep is so chaotic. So we try and maintain a good sleep hygiene, dimming the lights about an hour before bedtime, avoiding blue light for about 2 hours before bedtime, not to start and plan too many things late in the evening. So at that time is the time to wind down, listening to music, maybe doing some meditation before bed. And, you get lots of lovely, YouTube videos and podcasts now. And you're having a nice warm bath, do your magnesium sprays to help you sleep better. So prioritizing sleep also becomes very important. And then again, it has an impact on your cognition, on your brain fog, on your energy, about how you feel the next day. And, how was your sleep?
You know what? Actually, my sleep was okay. I would always be able to fall asleep, but I tended to wake up at like 3-4 o'clock in the morning. And I'm lucky being that I work for myself and I work from home. So I could take a little nap, mid-morning or mid-afternoon if I needed to. So I didn't make a big fuss about it. But I can understand how that can be very frustrating if you get into a loop of not being able to get enough sleep and you feel tired because of lack of sleep, and then you feel tired because of the hormonal fluctuations. I would just get up. I would do a little bit of exercises, a little bit breathing exercise. I also woke up with anxiety. That was why I usually woke up, and I just had to do some practices to calm myself down. So I think, like you're saying, is getting these lifestyle routines become very, very important. Exactly. And doing it consistently. So exactly. If before perimenopause you weren't as consistent with your diet, with your exercise, with your sleep, there's something about this stage and this phase of life where you're sort of like knocked in and like, okay, now wake up. You really need to care for yourself, like really pay attention here and become maybe a little bit selfish, because this is a stage where you really have to tend to your being on all levels, physically, mentally, spiritually, emotionally, because it can be such a roller coaster ride.
Absolutely. And, looking after yourself and having, you start thinking about some supplements. So can you take some supplements which will optimize your nutrition and make you feel better? And there are some, supplements that I always advise my clients, women who see me, to take if they can tolerate. So the few of them, one is the B vitamins, B complex, B12, B6. B2, B3. So they are, normally you can get in a combination called B complex, a little bit of all B vitamins. They are really important cofactors in the hormone biosynthesis. So it supports our hormones. And then vitamin D with K2, so also a very important cofactor for the hormone biosynthesis, plus great for our bone health also, really important. And we know other benefits, you know, the immunity and all that, but mainly from the hormones point of view. Then omega-3. So omega-3 is really important for our cellular wall structure. So important, really important for our, you know, like muscle strength and our cell health. And the other important one is magnesium. So magnesium, again, very important for all our hormones. Plus it has a calming effect and it can help with sleep as well. So taking some magnesium at bedtime, whether it's in the form of a powder or a capsule or a spray, with different women like different things. So these four, especially, I think these four are very important supplements or vitamins to include on our daily routine.
Mm-hmm. That's really good. And then I think once you've tried that to see how that helps you, if you want to entertain HRT and maybe go down that route. I know that's a big subject to cover and we don't have time to cover everything about HRT, but if you want to say just a few things about it, that would be helpful.
Exactly. So we have talked about lifestyle and supplements and diet, how we can help ourselves. And that is always important whether you take HRT or not. But in some women, the symptoms can be quite bad. And lifestyle and supplements in itself may not be enough. And I think we have to be well informed about HRT as well. And we it's so helpful, and we get so high, you know, such a high quality HRT now that, you know, and there are very few reasons why women can't take it. So if your symptoms are bad, if it's affecting your health, then please do not hesitate to go and see your doctor. Whether now more and more GPs are upskilling and improving their knowledge on menopause and HRT, or you go and see a menopause specialist who specially work in this field and get the information about HRT and see whether it will help you.
Yeah, very good. And that brings me to tip number 6, is how to seek for help and what to look for in a menopause specialist.
So first thing is that, can you get help from your own GP? I think that is always a good, first port of call. So check with your reception whether there is a GP or a nurse practitioner in your surgery who has got special interest in women's health and menopause. And if you have, then, you know, you go and see them, discuss your symptoms, discuss your treatment. But many of us may not be lucky enough to have one of those. Then you can see a menopause specialist. Now, menopause specialist can be available on the NHS, so you can ask your GP to refer. And this is usually in the cases where, you know, there are some uncertainties, there are some complexities that requires further discussion, then your GP can refer you to an NHS menopause specialist. Besides that, we are really lucky that now we have got lots of very experienced and skilled menopause specialists working in the private field. So look at their bio, see how much experience they have, see whether they are registered with the British Menopause Society, whether they are accredited by them. And a lot of menopause specialists or hormone specialists, they are trained in bioidentical hormones. So if that is something that interests you to go for more personalized bespoke hormone replacement therapy, then you can also look at that. There's lots and lots of options available.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Really good. And don't give up hope. So even if your GP says, no, I can't help you, see if you can find someone else too. Just don't give up.
Exactly. And you know, like if you have the knowledge and you have the tools, then you can take that to your GPCF. And in a lot of websites where you can get the menopause symptom questionnaire so that you can do yourself, you can fill them out and take it to your GP, see, I've done this, these are my symptoms, I think I will benefit from hormone replacement therapy. And they will definitely try and help you.
Exactly. So the more educated you are as a consumer, the better it is when you go to seek help. I'm a huge advocate of that. Be educated.
And there you go. So what you are producing now, Anita, is, you know, this video, this podcast, that would be so helpful in empowering women and educating them. And I think that's your mission, isn't it?
Exactly. That is my mission. So now, just quickly, is a tip number, let me see. So quickly, tip number 7 is about postmenopause. So we've gone through perimenopause, that one moment in time. We haven't had a period for 1 year. We're menopausal. And then for the rest of our life, we're postmenopausal. Now, say we haven't had any symptoms. Perimenopause has been quite easy, or even perimenopause was really challenging. What can we look at for postmenopause?
So one good thing about, you know, like getting postmenopausal is that, so the hormone fluctuations in perimenopause, that settles down and the hormones become very low, but they stop fluctuating. So a lot of symptoms begin to improve. So usually on an average, you can say the flushes, sweats within about 2 to 3 years postmenopausally, they ease up a lot on its own. The mood stabilizes, the sleep gets better, the brain fog eases up. So many symptoms get better if you are having symptoms. Obviously, if you are not having symptoms, which is also, that's fantastic, really. But there are few changes in our health that happens postmenopausally because of the lack in or loss of our hormones. So estrogen is a very important and protective hormone for our body. So with postmenopause, with the lack of estrogen, we begin to lose our bone mass. So the bones begin to become more thinner and more brittle. So it's a slow process, but the most rapid change happens around 5 years, around the time of menopause. So really important to look after our bone health via vitamin D, calcium-rich diet, our proteins, our weight-bearing exercises, and our strength training. And also and it's important to find out if you are at a higher risk of osteopenia or osteoporosis, which is kind of brittle bone conditions, then you have to seek medical advice, and then HRT would be important for you. Estrogen is also very important for our heart health. So when we have our estrogen, we are, you know, premenopausal women, the risk of heart disease is much lesser in women compared to men. But once we lose the estrogen, our heart begins to, you know, the heart risk factors begin to change and the incidence of heart attacks and heart conditions increases. And by the age of 70, the heart disease risk is the same as men. So very steep incline from the age of 50 onwards. So again, looking after our heart is very important and optimizing our other risk factors, making sure our blood pressure is fine, cholesterol is fine, your blood sugars are fine. That is all going to help with the heart health. They can be change in, you know, cognition. We know that Alzheimer's is the most common killer for women. That's the most common, the first cause of mortality in women. And our hormones, our estrogen is protective towards our brain as well. So there is increased risk of dementia and Alzheimer's postmenopausally. So these three are very important, our bone health, heart health, and our brain health.
Yeah, really good. I think that's very important to mention because these happen very gradually over years, maybe over decades. So those lifestyle choices really make a huge impact. So what you do today can really have an impact on what happens 10 years, 20 years, 30 years from now.
And the one thing I would like to mention in this is that many women are very scared that if they don't take HRT, you know, their health will not be as good as someone who is taking HRT. But that's not true. So, you know, for some reason, if you can't take HRT or if you don't want to take HRT, that is absolutely fine, really. As long as you make the necessary lifestyle adjustments, be really proactive in looking after yourself, you can achieve a very good health postmenopausally.
Exactly. Yeah, I love that message. That's really good. Thank you for sharing that. That will be very, very helpful. Now, our last tip just is about asking you, what is it that you see in your clinic? What do you women usually come, if there was a red thread sort of through it all?
I think, you know, a few things that really, you know, sometimes makes me sad is that many women who come to my clinic who have often been struggling for many years, maybe because of lack of knowledge, maybe because of fear of HRT, maybe because of social stigma, maybe because of thinking that menopause is something that you have to push through, you have to shoulder through. You know, you are weak if you seek help. And I think when by the time they come, they are really struggling and they have actually lost, you know, quite a few years of their life. Maybe their relationship is affected. Maybe they, you know, their work is affected. Maybe their relationship with their kids are being affected. So I think being, you know, empowered with the right knowledge is really important, so that we, whatever your decision may be, but you should know the facts.
Mm-hmm. Really good. Yeah, lovely. These are so helpful tips. Thank you so much for sharing them with me and us. I wanted to just end this with some books that maybe we recommend as some resources, because I think that as you start to get to know more about it, then you get more curious about it, maybe want to read up about it. So would you mind sharing yours and then I can share mine?
Absolutely. So I think let's start with yours, you know, the book by Professor.
Start Alice with mine. Right? Okay.
You know, that is a very, you know, baseline, you know, that's just really good, comprehensive.
Yeah. So I love this one by Dr. Lisa Mosconi. You should definitely check her out, The XX Brain. She's done a lot of work on Alzheimer's. Highly recommend this. That was her first book. And then her second book is The Menopause Brain. That menopause doesn't just start in our ovaries, but it also affects our brain. So a lot of great knowledge there as well. And The Complete Guide to Menopause by Dr. Anise Mukherjee is, it's not a thick book, but it contains really everything that you need and a lot of what we've shared with you here as well. So I love that one. And my last one is called The Second Spring by Kate Codrington. And this one talks about the seasons, like we are talking about here on this podcast, the phases, the stages, and the cycles of life. So a lot of what she's writing about might resonate with you as well. So different perspectives.
Amazing. Such lovely recommendations. And, you know, what I have got is more kind of from my integrative functional you know, approach, because you've got all the good books there. There's only one book I would mention from the conventional menopause is a book by Dr. Hannah Schott. Sorry, I don't have a copy with me. This is a book on premature menopause or for women who go through menopause below the age of 40 or early years. We don't have a lot of resources for these group of women, so that's a very good book. Besides that, I've got a few books. So one book is by Marion Stewart, where she talks about managing your menopause naturally. Really good book, really good tips upon, you know, like nutrition, herbs that you can use to manage your hormonal symptoms. Another one is evidence-based cognitive behavioral therapy, that you can do for yourself, which is Living Well Through Menopause by Professor Myra Hunter. She's really, really good. And there is one book, The Hormone Cure by Sarah Gottfried, for women who are interested in, you know, more functional hormone, bioidentical hormones. This really good book. And there is also a book by Dr. Marion Gluck, who was one of the pioneers of bioidentical hormones in the UK, which is It Must Be My Hormones. So if you want to know more about those. So a lot of bedside reading for everyone.
Oh, that's great. I hadn't seen many of those books, so wonderful to get to know some more books. You can never have enough books, I think.
Absolutely. It's a slightly different take of, you know, these books. So it kind of then gives a whole comprehensive choice for women depending upon what their preferences are.
Exactly, because I think we mentioned that everyone's experience is going to be different, so you might want to seek different books. So go out and find what it is that you need so that you can support yourself in the way that is needed for you. I think that is very important.
Absolutely. And British Menopause Society has a patient arm, which is called Women's Health Concerns. And they have done a lot of fact sheets covering various aspects of menopause, charting, safety, migraines, bleeding with menopause, bleeding with HRT. So have a look on their website as well. So a lot of fact sheets.
Oh, great. I will list all of the books in the show notes as well as the papers that you just mentioned now so that you can find it. So thank you so much, Dr. Shashi Prasad, for having this conversation with us and sharing these 8 tips. I'm sure that it's going to be very helpful for anyone listening. Now, where can anyone who wants to find you, where can they find you?
Right. Okay. So if you want to find me virtually, I have got my own Instagram account, Dr._Shashi_menopause. I put a lot of evidence-based information, both from conventional as well as from functional approach on there. So you can follow me on there. And I have got my own website, drshashiprasad.com. So you can find me there. I have a clinic in London. So I am based in Southwest London. So I have a clinic in Surrey and I also work in Harley Street. So if you want to see me in person, you can see me in these two places.
Great. Do you do online consultations as well?
Yes. Yeah, so both the clinics do offer online consultations. Yeah.
Amazing. Yeah. Your Instagram account is really good. So much information that you share there. So definitely take a look at her Instagram account as well. All right. Thank you so much. So I think that's it. Do you have anything that you'd like to end with? Anything we didn't cover?
No, thank you for having me, Anita. I think it was very comprehensive. If you want to talk, we can carry on talking for a long, long time. But I think we have covered the core points. And yes, so I think, you know, empower yourself and prioritize yourself.
Yeah.
It's very important things for, you know, our midlife health.
Exactly. Empower your phase, your perimenopause phase. Yeah. Wonderful. Thank you so much. And everyone who's listening, let us know your thoughts, any feedback. If you have any questions, should you watch this on YouTube, you can comment under the video. If you are listening to us on any of the podcasting apps, you can send us a message through any of our social media accounts if you want to, and I will list everything in the show notes below. So thank you so much for listening. Until next time, take very good care. Bye.
Bye.